will be taken under advisement. Okay. Gosh, we have whole posses for this next case. Okay. Our next case, 093661, Brenda Cheney versus the Plainfield Health Care Center. Are you Ms. LaRue?
I am. Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Denise LaRue. I'm here with my associate, Megan Lehner, and we represent the appellant plaintiff below, Brenda Cheney. The case is before this court on appeal of the district court's decision granting summary judgment and dismissing Ms. Cheney's hostile environment and discharge claims that were brought based on race in violation of Title VII of the Civil Rights Act and as well as Section 1981. I stand by the presentations that we made in our brief, but for purposes of my presentation this morning, I'm going to focus on some comments I want to make concerning the discharge claim. The EEOC will be addressing the hostile environment claim. On appeal of her discharge claim, Ms. Cheney contends that the district court failed to review all of the evidence in this case through the lens of her entire short 3-month experience at Plainfield. Now, this experience includes evidence of racial slurs that were directed towards her, Plainfield's practice of prohibiting her from working with Caucasian residents, from working as their certified nurse's assistant, or CNA, solely based on her race, and having a daily assignment sheet with the notation, prefers no black CNAs.
You know, I am curious what a care facility ought to do about a patient with severe dementia who screams racial epithets at African Americans.
Well, that's not the situation that we had
here.
I know. But what?
Of course I know.
Yeah, I think in that situation, these are trained, certified nurses' assistants. And these individuals, like Brenda Cheney, are trained to deal with people who are suffering from pain, all kinds of temperaments and dispositions, and dealing with elderly people with dementia. And so in a situation, if that makes the CNA uncomfortable, I think that's a decision between the CNA and the resident, the residential facility in terms of whether that CNA wants to work there. I do not think that if a residential facility is regulated by Title VII, that they have the right to make a blanket prohibition in some type of paternalistic protective means to protect the staff member. I don't think that that's allowed under Title VII.
But for instance, could the supervisors at the facility have said to Ms. Cheney, look, Mrs. Smith in room 310 is a racist. You're welcome to care for her, but you need not if it makes you uncomfortable. The choice is yours.
Absolutely. I think that would have been appropriate. I absolutely think. Mrs. Cheney's an adult. She's a trained professional. She's a CNA. And I think that there should never have been any blanket prohibition. The problem with that and the problem with the district court's decision and the impact of that is in this situation there were three residents on Ms. Cheney's floor that specifically she was not allowed to care for or perform CNA services for solely based on her race. That's not disputed. But let's suppose that instead of three residents, it had actually been a larger majority of residents saying, we don't want black CNAs caring for us. In that situation, the facility could have said, well, we're going to fire all of our black CNAs, and we're not going to hire any black CNAs, and it's not us. We just have no work for a black CNA. Well, pointing to the district court's decision below, that would be reasonable. And that is not right. that is a violation of the law, it is an error of the law, and it needs to be corrected. And that's what we're asking the court to do today. I wanted to further state in terms of the discharge claim that it's against the backdrop of this racially hostile work environment that Cheney presents her evidence of discriminatory discharge. Now, utilizing a direct method of proof, Brenda Cheney presented sufficient circumstantial evidence from which a reasonable jury could conclude that her race was a motivating factor in her termination. First, there's evidence in the record that calls into question the credibility of John Reyes, the director of nursing. Now, this is the individual who in his affidavit claims that he made the decision, he was the sole decision maker. The evidence that we've raised in our briefs points to or challenges his credibility with respect to whether or not he actually did an investigation, whether he's telling the truth with respect to that. We're not challenging how he did it, but whether or not he's truthful in saying that he did. There's other evidence challenging his veracity. He claims that he issued discipline to Brenda Cheney the month before. Brenda Cheney absolutely denies that. Again, that goes to his veracity. I had shared some of my time with the EEOC, and I see that it's time to turn it over to the EEOC.
Can I just ask one question? In terms of the investigation that Reyes did, he never interviewed C.J. Hart, is that right?
He did interview C.J. some 14 days after the incident occurred and subsequent to Brenda Cheney's termination.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Ms. Bernstein.
Good morning. May it please the Court, I represent the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, amicus curiae, in support of Brenda Cheney. The District Court erred in holding the Plainfield Healthcare Center is not liable for employment practices that clearly violate federal law. Plainfield restricted Brenda Cheney's work assignments solely because of her race and fostered a racially hostile work environment. Every day she worked at Plainfield, she received an assignment sheet with the notation, prefers no black CNAs, next to the name of a resident on her unit. Plainfield employees routinely reminded Cheney she could not assist certain residents solely because she's black, and two white coworkers directed racial slurs at her. Cheney felt demeaned and devalued by this race-based disparate treatment, which the district court recognized was both severe and objectively offensive.
You know, we know that gender can be a bona fide occupational qualification in these types of healthcare settings, but race cannot. But what about a resident who requires only Christian nurses? What about that?
Well, there is a BFOQ for religion. I have never seen a case concerning a religious BFOQ in this circumstance. In general, sex is considered a BFOQ where intimate bodily contact is essential to performing a job. But while there are sex-segregated facilities like restrooms and changing areas that are generally accepted in our culture, racial segregation of such facilities is a shameful historical fact, and it is no longer tolerated in our culture. And that is why Congress put in the text of this statute a BFOQ for sex, for religion, for national origin, but not for race. Because the district court in this case erred in holding that Indiana law somehow absolves Plainfield of liability for practices that violate Title VII, the Supremacy Clause would require that Title VII supersedes Indiana law to the extent of any conflict. The EEOC therefore respectfully urges this court to reverse the district court's summary judgment ruling and remand for trial on the merits of Ms. Cheney's claims.
Thank you very much. Okay. I'm sorry. I have
Your Honor, Bill Ivers on behalf of Lincoln Healthcare.
We have Janet McShera.
Janet McShera is my partner. She is here with me today, as is my law clerk, Mark Stern. We're with the Harrison & Mobley Law Firm in Indianapolis. We are here on behalf of Plainfield Healthcare Center, the appellee.
Okay, thank you.
May it please the Court, Your Honor, I'd like to begin with the first argument raised by the EEOC that somehow Title VII trumps or is supreme to the patient's rights under the Medicare statutes and regulations. While I would agree if this were purely a state law issue, there may be a supremacy clause question in this case, but we don't have that. The state regs that the district court referenced are regs that were based upon federal statutes and federal regulations that had been in effect for 10 years before Indiana ever adopted them.
Well, suppose Plainfield is correct that the state law required them to maintain this policy. Could the policy nevertheless have been used as evidence of a racial bias in hiring and firing? I mean, obviously, having African-American nursing assistants is less useful to Plainfield than having white nursing assistants, since under their understanding of the law, African-American nursing assistants cannot do the full range of work that white nursing assistants can do. Could a court factor that into its consideration of whether the health center had an incentive to consider race in its hiring and firing decisions?
I suppose that is a factor that the court could consider. It is not a factor that Plainfield Healthcare considered, as demonstrated by the fact that Brenda Cheney was hired, as demonstrated by the fact that her supervisor, Ms. Askew, was also an African-American. It's demonstrated by the fact that there were other African-American CNAs that worked at Plainfield Healthcare. So had they, in fact, considered that regulation as a basis for their hiring decisions, why would they have hired those other individuals?
Is it your feeling that Plainfield was between a rock and a hard place?
I think it really was, Your Honor. And I think Judge Sarah Evans Barker at the district court also saw that as kind of where the Plainfield was when she said Plainfield did what it could do to balance the interests that existed between its employees and the patients who under federal law had the right to choose who touched their bodies. And they did that by doing the least offensive thing that they could, which is to have a notation on the chart, not putting a sign on the door, not announcing it to the whole world that this individual doesn't want an African-American CNA.
That would hurt the patient more than it would hurt the nursing assistant to have a sign on the door. I mean, that's like wearing a sandwich board. I am a racist.
Well, unfortunately, Your Honor, there are some racists who might think that that's a good thing.
To wear the sandwich board.
Wear the sandwich board to demonstrate to the whole world that, hey, I'm a racist.
Do you think there's a distinction between giving her giving the plaintiff here the option of going into the room? Do you think that's a distinction, saying to her, look, we have patients, they're racist, or they don't want anyone black waiting on them, and we thought we should make you aware of that. We're not going to say you can't go into the room because that's part of your duty.
If you look at the chart,
but if you choose to do that, this is what you'll face.
Absolutely.
Isn't that something that Plainfield could have done?
That's what Plainfield did do. If you look at the chart that they are relying upon, nowhere on that chart does it say, Brenda Cheney, do not go into this room. Do not ever, under any circumstance, treat this patient.
Yeah, but it says no black CNAs.
No, so it says prefers no black CNAs. It doesn't say no black CNAs may treat me. Completely different. If you look at the language of the chart does not say, Brenda Cheney, you can never treat this patient. There is reference in the record where Cheney testifies that there was a point where the patient had fallen, and she felt bad that she couldn't go in and take care of that patient. She could have. There was nothing in Plainfield Healthcare's policy, there's nothing in the record outside of her own self-serving statement, that she couldn't have gone in there, to help that patient to her feet. So with respect to that argument, was Brenda Cheney specifically segregated and prevented from assisting or working on Caucasian employees, Caucasian patients? No, absolutely not.
What response would you have to the question that I asked Ms. Bernstein, regarding a resident who requires only Christian nurses?
My response, Your Honor, would be to the extent that the Medicaid patient rights rules say that the patient has an absolute discretionary right to choose what care they have, absolutely. That patient would have the right to only have a Christian caregiver if the patient chose, or a Jewish caregiver, or a Hindu caregiver. And clearly, even the EEOC would agree that under Title VII, the BFOQ allows that.
Is that really how those regulations, what they textually say and how they've been interpreted? What if the nursing home doesn't employ any certified nursing assistants or other service professionals with those specific characteristics?
In that situation, then that patient would have to decide whether or not they want to stay at that healthcare
facility.
Well, obviously.
I'm asking you what the regulation says and whether it's been interpreted to...
Unfortunately, Your Honor, I have seen no cases specifically indicating what the scope of the patient's rights are
construction of those regulations and the district court's the right one? That those regulations guarantee to a nursing home resident the right to choose any service provider and require that the nursing home bring such a service provider to the nursing home to render care.
I believe the district court's decision is correct on this issue in light of the fact that a patient in a nursing home has, subject to very, very limited exceptions, situations where the patient is going to be a threat to themselves or their safety, or the safety of another patient. Pretty much the patient has carte blanche on what care is or isn't provided. So much so to the extent that
the patient could insist on access to a private physician. In other words, that the nursing home allow the patient's private physician to come in and examine the patient. I mean, that seems consistent with the text of the regulations. I'm not sure what we have going on in this case is consistent with the text of the regulations.
And I guess I would disagree with you, Your Honor. I don't see that it's inconsistent with the text of the regulations. To the extent that the regulations would even give the patient the right to say, CNA, don't come in here. If the monitor has gone off and my heart has stopped, don't resuscitate me. If the patient can make that decision on life or death, certainly the patient can make a decision on who does or doesn't enter their room, which for all practical purposes is their home, their private home. Even Brenda Cheney testified that the patient's room is tantamount to that patient's home. The patient should be allowed to decide who comes into their home. And what the EEOC and what Brenda Cheney are trying to impose against that right is a right that does not exist for Brenda Cheney to choose who she does or doesn't treat. She doesn't have a corresponding right to treat any particular patient. None whatsoever. And for that reason, we do not believe that the district court has done anything improper in interpreting the statute the way that the court has.
So in the daily assignment sheet, which says prefers no black CNAs, when we look at the broader context of this, we have coworkers when we look at the hostile environment and the issue of harassment. Coworkers that tell her she can't go in there because she's black. She complains to her supervisor two or three times about this. She's never, I don't see any evidence in the record that says, look, this is how the patients feel and it's your choice whether you want to go into the room. Is there anything in the record to that effect?
There is nothing in the record to that effect.
So when one looks at the totality of the sort of circumstances, one sees in the chart, prefers no black CNAs. coworkers tell you no black CNAs can go wait on them. You complain to a supervisor, and you're not told, oh, well, this is their preference. You know, their room is like their home. They have the option. We don't say that you shouldn't go in that room. We just want to make you aware of it. There's no evidence in the record of that kind of conversation taking place, is there?
But I also want to correct the record here, Your Honor. The only complaints that were made by Cheney, there was one complaint made by Cheney. There was one complaint made by a coworker on behalf of Cheney.
According to the deposition, and I have not read her deposition, but at least in the brief, it indicates that Cheney complained to Askew two or three times, and then she complained to one of her supervisors.
And she also testified that after she made those complaints, Askew talked with the person who made those offensive comments, and the comments stopped. The only other comment that occurred after the complaints and after Askew took action was one isolated incident in which a coworker said, I'm sorry, Brenda, but this patient prefers no black CNAs. And I'll take care of her.
And the coworkers who made these racist statements, was there any discipline, any evidence in the record that they had been disciplined for making these comments to Cheney?
The statement regarding what was on the chart? No. Thank you, Your Honor. I see my time is done unless there are additional questions from the bench.
Thank you, Mr. Ivor. Thank you. Okay. Rebuttal. Are you going to share your rebuttal with Ms. Bernstein?
If you would like.
I'll give you each a minute.
I just want to point out that since the passage of Title VII, Ms. Cheney does have a right to work in an environment that is free from racial discrimination and racial hostility. Certainly, these residents are coming into this facility, and the facility tries its best to make it a home atmosphere and to make it the residents' home. But the fact remains, this is a regulated facility. It is not like a private residence. So there are going to be some things that the resident is not going to be allowed to do or have or say or whatever, because it's a regulated facility. And that's the responsibility that Plainfield has, because they are regulated by Title VII. The one thing I also want to point out is that under the federal law that's cited by Plainfield, the only right to a medical provider is with regard to a physician. It doesn't say anything about other your right to choose other care providers, just the physician. Finally, I want to point out that she, in fact, was never told that she could go into these rooms. She, in fact, believed that if she did so, that she would be fired.
Thank you, Ms. LaRue. Ms. Bernstein.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to the federal law, the Medicare law, that is a provision that was enacted in 1987. There's nothing in either the statute or the regulation that indicates that Congress meant to repeal or somehow impose an exemption to Title VII or an exception to Title VII for healthcare facilities. And the federal law is clear that this court will not, and the Supreme Court will not, infer or imply a repeal or an amendment to an earlier statute and a later enacted statute unless the two are irreconcilable and that you can't give effect to both. And here, it's clear you can give effect to both. What you can hold is that when the federal law says that healthcare facilities have to provide reasonable accommodation, and it's clear it says reasonable accommodation to the preferences of residents, that does not include accommodation of racial bias in violation of federal law. And for those reasons, we would urge this court to reverse.
Thank you. Well, my goodness, thanks to all counsel for a well-argued case. on a difficult subject. And the case will be taken under advisement, and we'll go on to the next case.